This is Meet the Writers. I'm Georgina Godwin. My guest today started writing as a child and had her first poem published at the tender age of 9. Yet it wasn't until decades later, once she'd had and raised her own children, that her career really took off. Since then, she's published 14 books, and her daughter, Meg, has also become a successful novelist. Her new book of short stories, Today, A Woman Went Mad in the Supermarket, spans her extensive literary career, including stories written in the 1960s, as well as in the depths of the pandemic in 2020. Hilma Wolitzer, welcome to Meet the Writers.
Thank you.
It's really lovely to have you here. I've interviewed your daughter in the past and I thought she was fantastic. And I love both her work and yours. I wonder, Hilma, how your upbringing and early life shaped your writing.
Well, I did not grow up in a literary household, but there was something perhaps even better. The grown-ups had a real oral tradition, and I lived in a three-generation household, and aunts and uncles and cousins lived nearby, so there was a great deal of family around, and they were always telling stories. And I remember as a child lying under the kitchen table while they all sat around talking and listening, and I think that was my first introduction to narrative. I also went to the movies a lot as a child and loved that. And even before I could read, I looked at the comics in the Sunday paper, and there was a narrative in them too. And I fell in love with the idea of storytelling.
When did you know you wanted to become a writer? And what was your first experiences of writing?
Well, that first experience as a child of 9, I belonged to something called the Junior Inspectors Club, which was an after-school program for children run by the Department of Sanitation in New York. And they had a mimeographed publication called the Junior Inspector. And that's where that poem was published. And my mother and I got to go down to the Department of Sanitation, where a man stood up from behind a desk and shook my hand and gave me some sort of diploma. And I was very thrilled and proud. But I don't think that my family really took my writing these really bad poems too seriously until a teacher, and I have to say, we revered teachers in those days, as they should be revered today. My mother went for a parent-teacher conference. I was in the fourth grade and with Miss Fredericks, and she came home glowing. She said, Miss Fredericks, she told my father, Miss Fredericks said Hilma shows great promise. And from that point on, I think they took my very bad little poems more seriously and encouraged me.
Now, you didn't start writing seriously until you'd had a family. Whose literary career came first, yours or your daughter, Meg?
Well, she was 11 when she published her first story, and she was 22 when she published her first novel. I was 44 when I published my first novel. The family joke was that my mother had until she was 88, but I was already writing at that point and publishing when Meg was 11, and she showed me her work. And of course, I was her mother, and the work was really good, and I praised it. And one day, and I kept praising everything she did, and one day she said to me rather angrily, oh, you just like everything I do. And I realized that she wanted to be treated with more respect as a writer, as a colleague. And so I was more critical. And then she burst into tears. So, you know, very hard as a parent to deal with this, but I realized that I had to find that balance between charity and honesty that stood me in good stead when I began leading workshops much later on, that it was important to tell the truth about the work, to be honest, but to also be aware of the human being behind the work, whose heart is beating very quickly, waiting for criticism.
And of course, that's so much more difficult when that person is your daughter. I mean, I wonder how your relationship's been influenced by the fact that you are both great published writers.
Well, it has actually enhanced our relationship. We're really good friends. She's so much fun to be with and to talk to on the phone. We talk a lot about our writing and we share early drafts of our work. We send each other work. And again, we're critical, but usually constructively critical. And we talk about books and other writers we know. We share friends who are writers. It's just lovely. And words stand us in good stead. I have to say that every night she sends me a Guardian cryptic puzzle from your Guardian, and they're very difficult, and we try to solve them together. So words connect us in many different ways.
Your book of short stories, Today a Woman Went Mad in the Supermarket, takes stories that were first published in the 1960s and 70s, although some of them are new too. Now, you've published fiction for over 50 years. How do you think your relationship to writing has changed in that time?
The writing itself hasn't changed, and I thought it would. I hadn't written any fiction for quite a while when I wrote this final story in the collection, the story called The Great Escape, which deals with the pandemic. I was afraid because, after a while you start to lose words. Nouns seem to disappear. My husband and I used to try to think of someone's name, and it took us a half an hour, and we'd go through the alphabet, and he'd come up with the first name, and I'd come up with the last name. But when I was writing, when I sat down to write this story, it was as if I were young again. I mean, the words came faster than I could type them, and I was really surprised and pleased by this. And whenever you're writing, you lose yourself in the fictional universe. You forget who you are personally. And that is a great blessing, actually, at this age.
It's your first short story collection. What's the appeal of the genre, and why do one of these now, after 50 years?
Well, it was Meg, my daughter Meg, who encouraged me to do this, in fact, petitioned for me to do this. My husband and I both contracted COVID-19, from which he died. And we were both in hospital. We were in separate hospitals, actually. And I was not feeling well, and I was grieving. And I think Meg claims that she was reading my short stories and admiring them and came up with the idea of my putting them into a collection. And I think she was trying to cheer me up, but it didn't work at first. I just felt too sad and not well. But after a while, I began to understand that I needed to do something besides grieve, and I didn't have any of the normal rituals of mourning. There was no funeral, there was no visiting, there was nothing. We didn't even see each other. He really died essentially alone. So I also needed something to look forward to. And so Meg actually petitioned my agent about it as well and got him excited. And so when the story was accepted by the publisher, the agent actually called Meg to tell her about it before he even called me, which was funny, I thought. I was pleased to have it happen.
That story, as you say, is called The Great Escape. Did you find that there was solace to be found in fictionalizing your own experience? Was it cathartic for you?
It actually was cathartic. It was both heartbreaking and cathartic at the same time. And it's the only one of my stories that is so close to autobiography. So many things happened to us during that time of his becoming ill and then my becoming ill and the calling for ambulances and his getting worse and worse and us speaking to each other on the phone from the two hospitals and coming home and finding his shoes next to the bed and his one pair of his many drugstore eyeglasses on the bed too. It was all very difficult. And writing about it was a way of addressing it and starting to mourn and feel better and starting to heal from it. It did take a while. I had a Zoom memorial service for him exactly a year to the day of his death. It took me that long. And his clothing was still in the house. I mean, everything was here in the closet until my grandsons were vaccinated and could come and help me. I needed both physical and emotional help in disposing of his clothing, which we gave to charity in huge trash bags.
Hilma, I'm sorry. This is unbelievably sad. And what you must have been through is extraordinary to turn it into this brilliant collection.
Well, thank you. It didn't feel as if I were doing it for any literary reason. I think I was doing it for personal reasons at that point, to put it down, to recall how it was. But it's also the story of a long marriage. And though the char I assigned all the experience to fictional characters, that is not my husband and me. Someone asked the other day, well, so was he unfaithful? And I said, no, that belongs to the fictional characters. You can't separate, the two, the truth and what's made up.
Because you do return to the characters Howard and Paulette or Paulie over the years throughout the short stories, don't you?
Yes, I do. They became sort of like friends. And when I stopped writing about them, it seemed that they had moved away and moved out of the neighborhood. And I always wondered what happened to them. And writing about them was a way of finding out.
I wonder how important empathy is in your work.
Well, as important as it is in life, I think that recent times there's been a terrible amount of hate everywhere. And a lot of it is on the internet where people can express themselves more freely. And I think empathy is essential in it's a saving grace for us in hard times. Even during the time of COVID, when I had COVID and my husband had COVID, I realized that even though we were alone, we weren't really alone because the whole world was dealing with this. So I felt part of a large community, and I felt empathy was flying across the water from one place to another. And I was somewhat consoled by that.
Hilma, I wonder if you might just give us a taste of the title story, Today a Woman Went Mad in the Supermarket, because the premise is lovely and I'd love you just to talk us through it.
Well, it's both a literal title and a metaphorical title. A woman actually has a nervous breakdown in the aisle of a supermarket, but it's also, I think, reflects the way women felt during that period. This was on the cusp of the second wave of feminism, and I myself was a housewife, raised by a housewife to be a housewife, and I loved doing it. I loved being a wife and mother, but I also felt this restlessness, this desire to do something else, and I think that's reflected in the story.
Now, I know that you've taught in creative writing programs, including some really, really prestigious ones, the Iowa Writers' Workshop, for instance, Columbia, NYU, and so on. How does one go about distilling the experience of writing into something that's teachable to a student?
Well, I think writing can only be taught to writers, that they have to come in with some modicum of talent. And then you just look at the work and again apply that honesty and charity and try to help them find, what they've done that's good and what doesn't work in a story. My own first experience in a workshop was just terrible. I had gone to the New School in New York City, run by Anatole Breuard, who later became a daily book reviewer for the New York Times. And I was in my 30s and had not published yet. And the classroom was packed. It was a beginner's workshop. And he called on me first to come to the front of the room and read my story aloud. And I was very embarrassed. In addition to that, he asked me to spit out my gum, which embarrassed me further. And I read it very nervously, hyperventilating, and then collapsed in my chair. And Anatole asked for comments, and this man raised his hand and said, "That was the most boring thing I've ever heard." And it was awful. I was just ready to go home and make jello and wash diapers for the rest of my life. And but Anatole slipped me a note that said, "The story is fine, see me later." And to my critic, he said, "You may think that this is a boring story. You're entitled to do that, but you also have an obligation to tell the writer why you think it's boring and how she might make it better." And in that moment, I learned about revision and teaching, really. And the note also said that I was to speak to him later. When I did, he put me into an advanced workshop, and it was like skipping grades in elementary school. And in the advanced workshop, he had me read the story again, and they didn't like it either. But they gave me constructive criticism, and I became a grown up in middle age and was able to accept their criticism and use it to make the story better.
As you say, your first novel for adults, Ending, was published in 1974 when you were 44. You've been quoted as saying, "For a while, I was billed as the great middle-aged hope."
Yes. Now I may be the nonagenarian hope.
But I mean, it must have been quite a thing to come to that literary success in midlife.
Well, it was very odd because I was still mired in my domestic life, but also the domestic life gave me literary material at the same time. But it was very odd. All of a sudden, all these things happened. I had never gone to college. I had graduated from high school when I was 16 and went out into the working world. And so I had no degrees. And yet here I was teaching at these prestigious universities, and my publications became my credentials, which was really thrilling. And I found that I was able to teach. At first, I was almost afraid I couldn't. I mean, these students in the master's programs all had their bachelor's degrees, so they were ahead of me. And yet, their stories were placed on the table, and we just got to it, and it worked. I found out that I could teach. I love teaching, and I still have friendships with some of my former students.
One of the reviewers said of your work, "Each of these stories is like a circus clown car, stuffed with more meaning than Wallace's deceptively simple sentences seem able to contain." And is that something you're aware of? I mean, I know that that's one of the lessons that are often given to young writers, sort of less is more, and you're paring down and paring down. But were you aware of the fact that you had such great resonances in those sentences?
But they were still pared down. I have to say, I do believe less is more. And sometimes my students might accuse me of reducing a four-generation saga to a haiku. I just really cut and pare on my own work. I think the reference was really to the fact that it's not just a straight and narrow path. The story doesn't take just a straight and narrow path. Certainly, the final story doesn't. It deals with not only the pandemic, but the pre-pandemic days. It deals with parents. It deals with the death of parents. It deals with parents' dementia. I mean, a lot of things that did actually come out of my own life became useful there. And I found that somehow it all worked together. It became a narrative of a life.
You're 91, Hilma. What are you going to do next?
Well, I'm thinking Pauly is still living in my head. And I'm thinking now that I'm 91, I cherish my independence. I love my children, but I don't want to be dependent upon them. And both of my parents had Alzheimer's disease and were very dependent upon me. And so I dread that. I dread the idea of nursing homes and home attendance and things like that. And I'm thinking maybe Pauly should have that experience too, the same dread. And perhaps something happens that moves her children to want her to go into some sort of senior residence. And I don't know how it would work out. Writing it would be the way I'd find out.
And maybe Paulie could have the whole Alzheimer experience so that you don't have to.
Right, exactly. It only worked that way.
Hilma, thank you so much for talking to me. Please do give my love to your daughter, Meg.
I will. Thank you so much for having me.
Hilma Wolitzer there, and her book of short stories, Today a Woman Went Mad in the Supermarket, is published by Bloomsbury and it's out now. You've been listening to Meet the Writers, thanks to the production team of Nora Hole and Sophie Monaghan-Coombs. And you can download this show and previous episodes from our website or app, from SoundCloud, Mixcloud, or iTunes. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.